a frequency beyond space and time.
Unspeakable knowledge. It is Mad Tower Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Mad Tower Radio. And by the time you're watching this, I'm sure you're absolutely frothing at the mouth with rage that the episode did not come out on the weekend. And that is because Christian and I suffered an attack from the Werewolf Cybersecurity Division. They did not want us to talk about them on this episode. But anyways, I'm your host, Dan, and this is Mad Tower Radio. As usual, I'm joined by my co-host, Christian.
Mm-hmm. Spent the entire weekend fighting the Romtha Crystal Cybersecurity Division as well.
Yep. They're after us. They want to stop us from bringing you the truth. Christian, why don't you go ahead and give any new listeners a breakdown of what this show's about?
So, here at the Mad Tower Radio, we come once a week to share with each other a particular story, a particular creature or incident or conspiracy, something like that, that we found particularly interesting. We give it a rundown, maybe a little bit of its history and its favorite parts to us. And together, we take turns sharing our stories and trying to find just a little bit more of the truth out there.
That is a perfect explanation of what this show is about. How are you feeling, Christian? How was your day?
It started off a little wacky. You got my sleepwalk text, didn't you, this morning?
So, Christian, I wake up this morning, and Christian randomly had sent in a group chat at, 3 in the morning. He just goes, pee break. And I'm like, oh, man. I know that the rest of the guys were playing video games last night, but nope, it was not a part of any sort of conversation or anything. Christian just hit us with a pee break in the middle of the night.
I've been a frequent sleepwalker and a night terror victim enthusiast, if you will, for most of my life, but I think it's the first time I've sent a text.
What do you mean enthusiast? Is that like you're watching an A24 movie every time you close your eyes?
It means once a month you just have one of those dreams that you wake up sweating from, and you're like, I guess I'm going to go to work now. This sucks. Wait,
I really can't relate.
Oh, well, the most concerning part is that they're evolving now. I'm using my phone. That's a new and bad development.
Maybe you'll accidentally post your credit card information next time.
Oh, well, hopefully not. I'll get that worked out.
Well, my day was ass, as usual. Just working, you know.
Another exciting day in the swamp.
I really think they were on to something when they said everybody's working for the weekend. You know?
Well, we're stuck here in a midweek recording. It's going to probably be a double dose week, don't you think, to catch up?
Absolutely. Our listeners do deserve a double dosage this week.
Fantastic. So let's jump right into it, if you will.
Yeah, please go ahead.
So for this week, I wanted to try something a little different. Instead of finding a cool creature or this interesting story on the internet that I wanted to explore, I decided to watch and, for you, review the 2021 Hulu documentary called Sasquatch.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you were thinking about watching this show, I want to put it up in front. It's something I wish I would have known. They're lying to you.
Okay.
It's called Sasquatch.
Now,
yeah.
So I did watch the first 30 minutes of the first episode, and my wife was not interested. And so I turned it off, and that's where my Sasquatch experience ended. So I just want to put that out there too.
It markets itself as a mystery cryptid event. It talks about this incident in the 90s in which a group of people were murdered and torn to shreds by a Sasquatch on a weed farm.
Jesus Christ.
And it's a good pitch. It really got me going when I first saw the trailer. I was like, this is perfect. It's something I'm going to love.
You watched the trailer a couple months ago. You watched the trailer and then you were like, dude, this looks nuts. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to wait till Jess and I get back to Louisiana to watch that.
Yeah, I was pretty excited to start. And it starts off pretty strong. You know, it has these charming animations, like the hand-drawn bits as they're going through the back-in-time synopses.
Mm-hmm.
And the documentarian who's, you know, talking to us and leading us through the story, his name is David, let me check my little notes, Holthouse.
Okay.
And I found it really interesting in this particular documentary that this was an event that happened to him. Like the guy who's talking to us.
He was there.
Yeah. He tells this story about how he's visiting his friend up in the Emerald Triangle in Northern California.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of people late at night crash into the house. Like, they run in scared and they say, oh, you gotta come check this out. Like, we found these bodies out in this weed farm, and they were torn to shreds, they were ripped apart and mutilated, and all the weed was just ripped up and thrown on the ground. Like, it wasn't a gang event. Nobody stole the weed, or nobody, like, pocketed any money. Like, an attack from a Sasquatch that they believed that they saw.
Uh-huh.
And what it turns into is this crime drama, you know, interviewing gang members who don't want their faces on screen type, like,
really
pretty standard true crime nonsense.
Now, why do they go so much into interviewing gang members?
So one of the things I will applaud the show is they do a lot of work on building the setting, like building the community and the culture around the Emerald Triangle.
Uh-huh.
So this community he describes as being more into the supernatural than other communities he'd interacted with in his life.
Right.
He said, like, this is a culture that feeds off that. They really got involved with this story and they've made it some of their own. And he interviews a lot of people locally who are big Sasquatch aficionados, like people with the hats and the t-shirts and...
That's me. I'm the guy with the hats and the t-shirts. And
my favorite moment from the first episode is him interviewing this very kind older gentleman, and he's talking about how the weed in the Emerald Triangle grows bigger and better than anything else in the world. Like, it's the perfect climate.
Oh, yeah.
And he reaches into
I know about that.
You do?
I know about the Emerald Triangle.
Oh, what do you got about the Emerald Triangle?
Oh, once upon a time, I was studying a certain degree in which we talked about the Emerald Triangle.
This man, as he's lauding the Emerald Triangle weed, he's rolling this, like, fat blunt on the camera.
And yeah.
He looks out the window and says, oh, that's Bigfoot right there. I can see him. And he pulls this cute little Bigfoot plushie out from under the table and jiggles it
Jesus
around.
Jesus Christ.
So it can be a bit scary at times, but it's also very charming and just sweet in a way that I didn't really expect this murder documentary to go.
Yeah.
But the reason it's so violent and gang-oriented is because thanks to our man, Billy Clinton, the war on drugs escalates in the 1990s and it becomes a full, like, cabinet level priority.
Oh yeah. Hell yeah. We're going to win that one, boys.
Mm-hmm. And these operations like CAMP, the Campaign Against Marijuana Planting, this full, like, boots on the ground, choppers in the sky type, like, invasion of Northern California to be ripping Jesus. These plantations apart and like attacking the locals to defeat the weed to kill marijuana.
What the fuck? I didn't know about all that.
And
it's crazy. It's crazy because you hear about that, and here we are, just a short, like, I guess 30 years later now, and like it's all legal. It's all sanctioned, growing all the pot out there.
See, the final episode tells an interesting story about that, about how the evolution of the marijuana industry has made the Emerald Triangle an even more violent place.
Oh, okay.
He says, he describes over the course of these three episodes a really aggressive, really volatile region in which there's not a lot of organized authority. Like, it's kind of lawless up in those mountains.
Really?
It's might makes right a lot of times up there. And
yeah,
people are laying traps in the 90s for these feds to come get caught on. They're laying like fish hooks on wire in between their rows of weed.
What the hell?
Or one described like a shotgun shell on a mouse trap. They really horrifying things. Like, full-on weed bunkers out there.
So it was like fucking Vietnam out there in the Emerald Triangle.
Absolutely. Like, guerrilla warfare, dudes in tunnels fighting dudes in helicopters type combat out there.
That's fucking nuts.
And ever since the legalization came through, the market's gotten tighter. It's gotten harder to compete with big corporate entities, and so like the competition's been stiff.
Yeah.
And it takes him about three episodes to unravel this mystery about what happened there. And he, for some reason, like, wants to risk his own life to get these answers. Like, David Holdhouse is done a number of documentaries and things.
Okay.
In which he will supplant himself in these dangerous communities. He has a story he ran once where he infiltrated a like drug trafficking ring or something.
Yeah.
Like he's one of those like real up in it type journalists. So it's pretty interesting to see his methods, though for me, I think he kind of crosses a moral line at one point where he's talking to a guy on the phone and he's like, so there's going to be no cameras, right? Like, you're going to just record my voice? And he's like, yeah, sure. And then they cut to him in the dude's truck with a fake camera on his, or a hidden camera on his chest. And
what?
You're just listening, watching the conversation as this gang member drives David out into the mountains, and he's like, yeah, there's bodies all up in these ravines. Like, be careful who you're talking to out here. And I'm like,
holy shit.
Dude, if that dude finds out, bro, you got the hidden camera on you, like.
Yeah. That's nuts.
It's.
So.
Yeah.
Let me kind of rein this back in here. Like, sure. Where does it go on the Bigfoot angle?
So, that's kind of my big issue with the thing, is that it spends so much time in gangland and then so much time in Bigfoot land. It feels like it's on two very separate axes that tells its story.
Yeah.
Like half of the time he's interviewing these people, he's getting this information, and the other half he spends interviewing the two different beliefs of either Bigfoot is real, Sasquatch is out here, and I've seen it, and or I've witnessed it, or I have this data, and then there's, you know, the people who say, you're ridiculous, why are you asking me about Sasquatch, like I'm an adult.
See.
And some of the best parts, I think you saw one of them, was when he interviews these people who really, really believe in Sasquatch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember the guy who's describing where he's, as a kid, like walking in the creek or something, and he looks out over the trees and he sees like this creature looking at him?
Is that the one where he was like crying?
he breaks down. Yeah, like the
That was absolutely fucking nuts to me when that guy just broke down in the car, literally fucking sobbing about how terrified he was that he saw this creature.
It's that kind of stuff that I found the most interesting. It was dealing with these people who were really in it, you know?
Uh-huh. I really, really wanted to, like, keep going when I saw that part, but I didn't. But that part was really fucking good. That stuck with me.
It was the conviction that you've talked about in previous episodes, yeah.
Absolutely. That guy had it. Mm-hmm. I believe that guy fucking saw something.
That's the almost a direct quote that David uses in this show. He says something along the lines of, these people believe that they saw something. Like, these Sasquatch might not have done it, but they believe that Sasquatch did it, and that's enough.
Yeah.
And he spends a lot of time on that old Mad Tower Radio classic concept of how much believing in something and giving it that power in yourself can really, like, manifest some of these events.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I say, when you think that you're in the midst of having an encounter, you need to look at it with every lens of skepticism you can, to the point where you, like, you almost want to disprove yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So that, and like, when you can't, then you can say, holy shit, I saw something.
Something is happening here. I mean, all that sounds well and good, but it's by personal experience, hard to do in these really emotional moments.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's rough to do when you're in the moment and you're like, holy fuck, what could that be?
You're scared, you know? Your heart's racing, yeah.
It's dark, you know. It's raining.
He
you're alone.
Gets around to interviewing the man who caught the really classic, really famous Sasquatch walking through the field, and he turns around his shoulder and looks at you. He spends a lot of time with that guy. And
what does that guy have to say?
Well, he's in it to win it. You know, he says, I was looking out there one day and I saw something in the field, and I knew I had to get my camera. This was something that was rare. I could see, like, the muscle underneath the fur. It was something like I'd never seen before.
Now, did you get that sense of conviction from this guy?
It was kind of hard with this guy. I mean, he's an older dude.
He's probably been telling that same story for like 400 fucking years now.
Mm-hmm. And David really plays both sides. He interviews a man in the second episode who claims that he was the monkey in that suit who helped fake the video.
No way.
And there's this weird rivalry that they have. Like, one, the first guy says, oh yeah, this is legitimate, I captured this video. And the other one says, no, he's just been fleecing me, and like, he paid me thousands of dollars back in the day to not talk about it, but I'm gonna tell the truth from now on.
What the fuck?
And the guy who says that it's a fake, he says, yeah, he drives past my road and he doesn't even wave at me. He doesn't even look at me anymore. And his wife off camera is like, well, he did wave that one time you drove by. You remember that, honey? Like, totally. That's another, like, really great comedic moment that they captured. And
that's awesome.
And he makes a pretty interesting story in that he takes it from what I can guess is pretty objectively. He's not afraid to ask skeptics and believers alike and put them and their ideas next to each other.
Yeah.
Which I think it does a lot for me in, like, trusting David, that he's willing to challenge these skepticisms, challenge his own belief in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they format this documentary, they kind of they leave out some details till the back half, because otherwise you really wouldn't be sticking along for the ride probably as long.
Yeah.
Things like, he's like, oh, I forgot to mention, those two dudes who ran in telling me about the Bigfoot, they're actually crazy meth heads. Like, I wasn't sure I'll ever find them again. What? Yeah. He's like, they were tweaking. They came in, and we all knew. We kind of laughed at them after they got out and ran away after they told us our Bigfoot story.
Yeah.
So it kind of, that's like the transition between, oh yeah, I really want to investigate the Bigfoot story and I'm going to tell this murder mystery. Don't
always blend. What happened with the bodies?
He makes a pretty big investment in saying, like, there was no police report, there were no bodies found, but it's something that everyone in the community knows happens. Like, he talks to so many people up in the small town that's right by the road that it happened on, and they all know the story without prompting, without, like, leading it on. He'll be like,
yeah,
can you tell me about this thing? And they instantly can rattle it off. It's like a local truth.
I see.
And as they start feeding us little details, he says things like, okay, these three people who were killed on a weed farm were Mexican immigrant workers in to do a little bit of extra work on this particular spot.
Uh-huh.
And a large portion of the Emerald Triangle weed business at that time was controlled and operated by the Hells Angels.
Okay.
So about halfway through, he's pretty firmly on the side that this wasn't a Sasquatch, that he's chasing down an actual murderer.
Oh. And okay.
It's a little on the nose, but his first lead is he's investigating this guy named Bigfoot Jim.
Okay.
And David starts to question himself. He says, oh, wait, did I accidentally mess up this story? Did they say that a Bigfoot killed them or that Bigfoot Jim killed them? And that one kind of upset me. I was like, you don't need to play these games with me, Sasquatch.
That's so stupid.
And once that lead is dissolved, he calls the guy and he's asking him, you know, where were you fall 1992, you know, during this time? Did you ever kill anybody? Which, yeah, okay.
Good questions.
The dude's wife is pissed in the background. She's like, Bigfoot Jim never done killed nobody. Never did. Never will. And so he pretty much abandons that. But after...
Hold on. I just want to appreciate that the guy's wife calls him Bigfoot as well.
They said, how'd you get your name, Bigfoot Jim? And he was like, well, I like to run around in the woods barefoot. So they called me Bigfoot. What? Jim.
That's so stupid.
You meet a lot of really interesting, you know,
a lot of really colorful characters.
Yes, absolutely. Some of the characters I think are definitely worth getting through this. And it's not a long show by any means. None of the three episodes hit over an hour.
Okay.
And by the third episode, he's almost trying to pin this guy, one of the Hell's Angels biker gangs, and they never say his name throughout the show. They always, you know, blurt it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to private investigators. He's talking to cops in the area. He's talking to gang members. And it eventually becomes the idea that the Hell's Angels biker gang sort of psyoped Bigfoot.
Really?
That they were all sitting around, a couple of the gang members were sitting around one day, and they were upset about these Mexican immigrant workers muscling in on their territory. And one of them says, "Man, I wish we had, like, a chupacabra or something that we could scare them off with."
Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous. You know, horrible shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other guy says, "No, we don't have chupacabra, but we've got the Sasquatch."
Jesus.
So...
No, my God.
David gives us the theory that these gang members killed these men and set up the scene so that it looks like they were attacked. It looks like none of the weed was taken. So it wasn't federal forces. It wasn't another gang trying to make money, but it was a real monster attack.
Really?
And that they come in and chop the bodies up, run them over, mutilate them, really gory stuff. To even if, you know, people don't believe the Bigfoot thing, they see the example left by it.
Yeah, I get. I suppose that's fair enough.
And they even said that a part of their plan was to spread this story using chatterheads. You know, these meth heads. Like the two who came and told the story to David in the first place. That they would freak...
I see.
Mm-hmm. They'll freak some people out. They'll get the story out in the community. And it'll protect their territory.
And that's disappointing.
He really languishes in the final half of the third episode. It's a lot of like... Oh, we tell monster stories all throughout history, all throughout culture, to say, like, people shouldn't go here. Don't be afraid of caves. Be afraid of the dark. You're afraid of the forest. It's like a human instinctual thing.
Mm-hmm.
He ends on this really cheesy line. He says, oh, God, I think I wrote it down. Let me take a look. It's, I couldn't help but roll my eyes at it. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm glad I didn't watch it, because I think I'd have been rolling my eyes a lot.
For the record, the man's name is Bigfoot Gary, not Bigfoot Jim. Just want to let you know.
Jim, Gary, same difference.
He says,
Oh, Christian, be prepared to edit some audio. My cat is looking at me.
Oh, for sure. Let me just get the timestamp.
Oh, go away.
He says,
No.
I'm in. This is all exclusive cut content.
Can't come over here. All right. What'd you say?
I said, this is all exclusive cut content. I've got it in the notes. Is the cat good now?
I don't know. If he fucks with me again, we can leave it in. It might be funny.
Okay, cool. Let me just... 51. Okay. He says, I don't think Sasquatch killed these people, but I think I know who did. And that's it. He's like looking thoughtfully out in the woods, never tells us the name, never solves the mystery.
What a douche.
It leaves me kind of wanting for like a conclusion.
What a douche.
And... it starts so interesting and so strong. Like, they spend so much time talking about Sasquatches in this area. You know, they throw boulders at you and they bluff charge you to really freak you out before they attack you. And a lot of really interesting, fun stuff.
I was really sucked in from, like, the little bit that I watched. I was ready to watch more.
And it kind of dissolves away at the end.
Yeah.
So, you know, as if you're into Bigfoot culture, if you're into that sort of interesting rural community story that he tells, I think there's something to really enjoy about it. But if you're here to learn the truth about like a Sasquatch murder, it's more of a true crime thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to give it a rating out of 10, what would you give it?
I'm hovering on like a 6. Like,
okay.
I don't regret the 2.5 hours I spent going through it. It was pretty interesting at times. It's funny. It's scary when it wants to be. Like, it can hit a bunch of different notes. It just isn't very satisfying at the end, and it's not very cohesive.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I will give you, not a review, but I will tell you about another documentarian named David.
Okay.
Next week, and I promise you, he does not disappoint.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can I get a sneak peek? Are you calling your shots 1 week ahead?
You know, for just this time, because I really want to talk about it. But, yeah, I'll tell you about David Pilates and his work with Missing 411.
Ooh. Hoo-hoo.
I know I've been hyping it up for you.
I'm pretty excited to hear about it, actually.
Oh, after I finish telling you about it, you got to go watch the documentary, bro. It's insane.
Absolutely. I'll catch it right after we record.
All right. Well, do you have any more closing thoughts about the Sasquatch documentary?
You know, like I said, go ahead and check it out if you're into Bigfoot things. But also, if you're the kind of skeptic, conspiracy, interested, aficionado type person who likes questioning your own beliefs, like sort of challenging your own biases, I think it's also a pretty interesting exercise to go through.
Okay.
So I think there's something to really enjoy about it, but it's not a slam dunk by any means.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, based on your review, I think I'm going to skip it, you know? I'm not really interested in true crime.
Oh, if you're into true crime out. Yeah, that's you, if you're into that.
Well, I mean, if you're ready, you want to move on to what I brought?
Absolutely, I do. I've heard little drip and drops of information about this thing for a long time, and I'm ready to really get into it.
Well, for you today, I have brought you a local legend of mine. It's called the Rougarou. R-O-U-G-A-R-O-U.
Rougarou.
Cajun legend. And it says that it is a werewolf, wolf-like beast that hunts down Catholics who don't follow the rules of Lent. Which is similar.
Shit.
To the telling of the old French legends of werewolves. And this originated from French settlers in the area about the Rougarou, which is basically a werewolf creature. And it skulks around in the bayou and it gets you.
Is it particularly attuned to the swamp, or is it a regular, like, run-of-the-mill wolf man?
We'll get into that, okay. But the Rougarou was definitely brought to the swamp. It is not, well,
of
I guess that
swamp?
Depends on who you ask. Depends on who you ask, because I got multiple sources, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let me just get into it a little more. Another telling of the Rougarou legend is that it's a curse that lasts for 100 days. Unless the affected person can transfer the curse to another human being. And you usually get the curse from a witch or like a voodoo priestess.
Mm.
And I don't know why it only lasts 101 days, or they don't know the significance of that. Or why would you transfer it to another person if you can just wait 101 days? But, you know, whatever. Cajun swamp legends, you know. It gets a little wackier. It's said that you can protect yourself against the Rougarou by laying 13 small objects by your door. Because when a person changes into a Rougarou, they forget to count past 12. (Parentheses) Probably since they're only worried about midnight and the moon at this point.
So... They can't count past 12?
Yep. So the Rougarou will see the 13 objects and will be so perplexed trying to count. Try doing it again and again until the sun comes up and it has to flee.
It's same thing as the Chinese vampires and the bag of rice?
Yeah, you can just trick them, I guess, which I guess is cheaper than a silver bullet.
It's a little less cool too, but if it works.
Other stories are that the Rougarou is the headless horseman, derivative of witchcraft. Only a witch can turn you into a Rougarou. Like they can shapeshift into wolf. Sometimes the witch is the Rougarou and can curse others.
Okay.
The myth is still around. The cryptid is still around, you know. And it's all over Louisiana. Like, I didn't learn about this thing online until much later. I learned about this from Louisiana people. Would you like me to tell you about my first encounter with the Rougarou? Oh,
absolutely, I would.
The first time I ever heard about the Rougarou was when me and my good friend Thibodeau, who my section of the episode is actually dedicated to, shout out to Tib, great guy, love ya. Me, and he's a Louisiana native, he's been here his whole life. Mm-hmm. And me, him, and another guy, for work, we had to go survey some land. And we had to go at night at like 3 a.m. Right? Mm-hmm. So before we got started, me, Tib, and the other guy were all standing around smoking and joking. And me and the other guy were both relatively new to the area. And so he looks at Tib and he goes, "Hey, Tib, is there like anything weird or anything like scary out in these like Louisiana woods, man?" And Tib, it was like something out of a fucking movie, man. He takes like a huge fucking drag off his cigarette. And he's like, "No, not really." And then he exhales and he's like, "Except the Rougarou." And then he just walks away. Like, no explanation offered. No nothing. He just walks away into the fucking pitch black woods, dude.
Just leaves you to think about that?
Just left me to think about that. Me and the other guy looked at each other. We're like, "What the fuck is a Rougarou?" And we, you know, we had work to do, so I went off into the fucking woods and I was just so fucking unnerved. Like, anytime I heard a branch snap, I'm like, "It's the Rougarou! It's the Rougarou!"
I mean, did he give any...
And I didn't even know what it was. Yeah, no.
No description?
Nope. Nope. Nothing. He's just like, "Except the Rougarou," and walks away into the darkness.
I mean, that's pretty powerful.
Oh, it was haunting. I was looking over my shoulder till the sun came up, man. Yeah. So, he told me later on that, like, his parents used to tell him about the Rougarou to, like, keep them from going too far from the house when they were kids.
I mean, that's exactly the thing that David was talking about in the documentary. Like, it's this cultural thing to, like, scare people by talking about monsters. Yeah.
Right. I mean, it was a fucking nuts experience. And let me send you a picture of how ingrained in Louisiana culture the Rougarou is. Okay. They have a picture of it at the New Orleans Zoo. And it looks fucking awesome. Now, like, Louisiana is the first place I've ever lived where, like, people have a strong sense of, like, culture, you know?
You tell me you didn't grow up with strong Midwest farm culture proud in you?
No, there's no fucking culture in Midwest Illinois. And if there was, I fucking missed it.
This picture's wonderful.
Isn't it?
Yeah, this is...
It has its own fucking exhibit at the zoo, bro.
He's a great guy, this Rougarou.
Oh, it's so cool. The Rougarou is such a... It's pretty cool. Like, I think it's representative of the culture. Like, I'm saying this thing is really cool for like what is essentially a generic werewolf.
Well, from everything that you had described previously, it sounds like it's a really like diffused creature, if that makes sense. Like, a lot of different things you can implant a lot of different stories into it, you know.
You can trace the origins of the Rougarou all the way back to France.
Mm.
So, I want to tell you really quickly, though, that when the French started telling the Native Americans about the Rouvrou, they weren't shocked at all, you know, because they said that they've seen this creature. They started talking about the Rougarou, and they were like, oh, yeah. Yeah, we know that guy.
Oh, you met him, too? I know him.
And they said that he was, like, revered as, like, a part of nature. Like, he wasn't seen as an evil creature, like something like a Wendigo, you know?
Just like a natural being?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So that's an interesting conflicting report with the rest of these. Right,
like a different cultures,
but
yeah,
you can trace the Rougarou right on up the Mississippi, across Lake Michigan, and back into Canada, another popular place for French settlers. Right.
So, are you saying there's reports or stories, myths about the Rougarou, like following up the Mississippi and stuff?
Not reports of it being seen on the Mississippi, but there's plenty of accounts of werewolves in Quebec.
Mm.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Since the 1600s, they've been seeing werewolves over there. And now, when you trace it back to France, it's called the, it has a much stupider name, it's called the Loup-garou.
Loup. Okay.
Loup hyphen Garou. And I'm not going to call it that because that's stupid. I'm going to call it a werewolf. But there's been a lot of sightings. A lot of sightings of werewolves in French Canada since the 1600s. Now, if you hop across the Atlantic over to France, from 1520 to 1630 in France, they were dealing with something called the French werewolf epidemic.
See, that was the little nugget you gave me for this week. You just said, hey, you heard this? And I was like, that just sounds like Bloodborne in real life. You mean what?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The French werewolf epidemic was there. And I never knew about that until I started looking this up.
What happened at the French werewolf epidemic?
It was like the Salem witch trials. Right.
Okay.
So, like wolves, just wolves in general, they're not seen the same way as they are here in America. We look at the wolf as like a strong spiritual symbol of like power and respect and like teamwork and like shit like that. You know, we love wolves over here.
Yeah.
Total opposite in Europe. They fucking hate them. Like, wolves are seen as a symbol of death, destruction. It's a bad omen to see a wolf.
That's interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people were getting fucking attacked by wolves left and right back then.
Like, just
out in the French countryside, people were just getting, like, killed by wolves.
Were they particularly big or something?
We'll get to there's a couple accounts of big wolves.
Okay.
But I mainly want to keep so these wolf attacks turned into like it started evolving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the first account was in the I think it was 1521. Yeah, 1521 was when they got the first, you know, it's the first recorded instance of anyone being accused of like lycanthropy. A man named Michael Verdun was arrested and tortured and confessed to being a werewolf along with two other dudes. A Mr. Pierre Bergot and a Philibert Monteau.
So, did they
now
confess before or after the torture?
Who's to say?
Okay, gotcha.
Bergot also confessed and told authorities that he made a deal with three men dressed in black who agreed to protect his sheep in exchange for the rejection of his belief in God. And once he did that, he was given an ointment that allowed him to shapeshift into a wolf, in which in that time they would stalk the land and kill and eat children. And all three of them were found guilty and executed.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty Salem witch trial-y to me.
Oh, very. It was a very, very Salem witch trial. And so they were having their own struggle over there, where France was just being marauded by wolves, both real and fake. And they were like, they just had such a problem with wolves that the king of France was like, hey, if you bring me fucking wolf pelts or werewolves, like, I'll pay you.
Okay, a nice bounty hunt, cool.
Yeah, so they just started killing wolves. Like, I did not know that France had just been at odds with wolves for this long. Mm-hmm. Enough for it to be called a werewolf epidemic.
Yeah, for it to leave such a like a scar in their in memory. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and it's crazy.
It feels like I feel a connection to it, sort of with the first story. Like these incidents can happen, and they can have such a strong effect on their culture that, like you said, it can follow these settlers across the ocean.
Absolutely. That's super interesting. Or there were werewolves that snuck on the boat.
Or sure, yeah, dude snuck on the boat.
You know? I mean, if I was a werewolf, you know, and they were like, hey, there's a werewolf in town. Like, people were getting on to me. I would get the fuck out of there. I'd take my ointment and go across the ocean.
That's a really interesting, like, hook, like an idea.
Like pretty hot time for wolves.
Like all the demons and monsters of Europe left with the settlers to get out of being persecuted. That's pretty hot.
Oh yeah. That'd be cool as fuck. And apparently this is very ingrained in French culture as well. Mm. Now the French werewolf epidemic officially ended in 1630, right? Mm-hmm. But then later on in the year of 1764, France was at odds with the wolves once more. Oh, now
they came back.
Now, hold on. I want to tell you about the Beast of Gévaudan.
Oh.
Now, Gévaudan is a region in France in the Margeride Mountains, south central France. And between 1764 and 1767, this beast was attacking people. Now, it's weird because this one is an actual fucking, like, documented event. Mm-hmm. Right? There's paintings of this shit. Like, dead bodies were produced. Reports were produced. Like, it's fucking insane. The Beast of Gévaudan was essentially a giant fucking wolf. Wolf-like canine with a tall, lean frame capable of taking great strides. It was said to be the size of a calf or a cow, or in some cases, a horse. And had an elongated head similar to that of a greyhound, with a flattened snout, pointed ears, and a wide mouth sitting atop a broad chest. The beast's tail was also said to have been notably longer than a wolf's, with a tuft at the end. The beast's fur was described as tawny or russet in color, but its back was streaked with black and white heart-shaped patterns on its underbelly. So, and it just fucking killed people.
This was a report you were reading from the 1700s?
Yes, that was its description. Oh, it would just run up and it would just fucking bite people in the throat and fucking kill them.
It wasn't like eating, it was just murdering.
It was just murdering.
Okay. Okay. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's crazy. They described it as like a wolf, yet not a wolf.
Mm.
Yeah. It's insane that, like, this thing has an official victim list.
Like names?
Yes. Oh, shortly afterwards, God. The first victim of the reported 14-year-old Jean Belay was killed near the village of Les Houlacs in Lagonge.
Like, it's a tragedy, but don't you think it'd be kind of sick if, like, you did an Ancestry.com and you found out, like, your great-great-great-grandmother's sister got eaten by a werewolf?
Yes.
That kind of rules.
I want you to take a look at some of the art from this Beast of Gavadon.
Absolutely.
It's insane. People were, like, painting this thing. It was such a...
Oh, my God.
Isn't that nuts?
Oh, I didn't expect it to be so graphic. Oh, my God.
The Beast of Gavadon just fucking... It was just a dire wolf living in the French countryside, running up and fucking killing people.
Mm-hmm. So that's,
you know,
tremendous.
And, like, there's a whole bunch of theories and explanations that, like, well, I mean, the most popular is that it was a fucking demon, similar to a werewolf, you know. Two is, like, hysteria, that it was packs of wolves, or it was just a wolf, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people think that maybe this was some kind of super beast.
Looks like a super beast to me.
Because of its odd descriptions, there's other ones where people say, like, oh, it looks like it has reddish fur. So some people think this was a lion, maybe. Okay. Some people think it's, like, maybe a hyena hybrid. Something crazy. Or there's another crackpot theory that a guy who was a noble, I can't find his name right now, but this nobleman who was, here it is, a red-colored mastiff belonging to Jean Chastel sired the beast, and its resistance to bullets may have been due to it wearing the armored hide of a young boar. So some dude just, like, bred a super dog and then put, like, boar armor on it.
Bred and equipped this demon?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and this required fucking royal intervention.
Another king came, like, through?
Not royal, military intervention. A first captain Duhamel of the Clermont Prince Dragoons and his troops were sent to Gavadon to, like, this beast.
Why is this beast not more known? Why is this not deep in our culture? Like, I want a Beast of Gavadon, like, film right now.
I bet there's a French film out there about the Beast of Gavadon.
It kicks ass. I'm going to look for that, actually.
You know, it is said that a man named Francois Antoine was the one who actually fucking killed the Beast of Gavadon.
So it was captured and killed?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. He is the one who killed the fucking Beast of Gavadon. And I got some photos for you.
Okay.
So, man just shot it. Let's not get it twisted.
I mean, with a musket, pretty impressive. Like, yeah. Good for you.
Yeah, he fucking killed this thing. And then he brought it to the king. Yeah. Hold on, I'm trying to pull up these pictures for you. But whoa. What is that? What was that I saw? Oh my God. No way.
What?
Christian, did you ever watch Teen Wolf?
Teen Wolf? No, I didn't hate myself when I was a kid.
Well, apparently, The Beast of Gavadon is a character in Teen Wolf.
Oh, sure. Naturally. That's square with me.
Might have to check that out. That's cool as fuck. I didn't know that.
It's interesting that media is starting to reach out to you and, like, pique your interest.
I'm not going to watch Teen Wolf. Maybe I'll look up the Beast of Gavadon scene.
Maybe just catch a scene, yeah, for sure.
Just to kind of see what's up. But I'm not going to go watch all of Teen Wolf.
I'm not going to watch all 7 seasons or whatever?
Probably not.
Okay.
I got enough of that when I watched Twilight with my wife. I'm on the image tab for Beast of Gavadon, and here, feel free to include this little meme in the video. That's a good one.
Oh, sure. That's going in.
But I think my favorite part of the Beast of Gavadon is the artwork. It is so sick.
Yeah, some of these are really, really interesting.
They have statues of it in France. Marine G. Vallée versus the Beast of Gavadon, the statue. Take a look at that.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, that one's super cool.
Yeah, so it starts as a Bayou legend of a fucking werewolf that can't count past 12.
Mm-hmm.
And you fucking trace it back to its origins, and you get insane stuff like the French werewolf epidemic and the Beast of Gavadon. Right? Yeah.
I love the journey that this made.
Now, I want to top it off with a sighting I have for you that I found on the Phantoms and Monsters forum.
All right.
Which, great forum if you haven't been there and you want to find cryptid stuff. Whenever I'm looking for sightings for these videos, I will just fucking go to their search bar, type in, like for this one, I just did Rougarou, and here it comes. So this one comes out of Beauregard Parish, Louisiana, which, that's right in my backyard. I'm not in Beauregard Parish, but I'm a stone's throw away, man.
That's terrifying. Interesting.
So, without further ado, let's get into it. This past weekend, I received a telephone call from PB, who is an owner of 70 acres of thick west central Louisiana woodland in Beauregard Parish. About 4 weeks ago, PB and his 5-year-old daughter were walking along their long dirt driveway that leads to their home. When they reached the paved section of the driveway, PB noticed a 90-pound male bobcat laying along the edge. There were no apparent wounds or blood, but the fresh carcass looked like it had been battered and crushed. This area has abundant wildlife and predators that include bobcat, black bear, and at least one very large female panther that has been occasionally seen by PB. The sight of this dead bobcat was concerning since there was no indication that any predator had fed on the carcass. As PB and his daughter stood there looking at the bobcat carcass, he noticed some movement in the thick, dark woods not far from the driveway. There is a game trail that cuts through the woods and continues over the dirt driveway into opposite woods. There was also a pond nearby. As they moved closer, PB observed a wolf-like head rise above the thick brush. The head was very large, with grayish-black fur. PB pulled out his phone and quickly snapped a photo of this beast. As he did, a deep growling sound emanated from the unknown creature. As it stood up, PB immediately saw that this canine was at least 7 foot in height and covered in sparse blackish fur. It had freakish broad human-like shoulders and a wide chest, muscular arms and legs, as well as a tapered torso. The eyes seemed to shine a weird greenish hue. PB and his daughter backed off as this beast took a long stride forward. It stopped, leered at PB with its green eyes and growled deeply. PB's daughter ran away screaming for her father, which seemed to startle the upright canine. It quickly turned and fled into the woods. PB attempted to take another photo as the beast moved off into the dark woods, but there was no distinguishable form on the image. They both quickly ran for home. Since that encounter, PB has attempted to find a reporting agency when he finally found my contact information. He sent me the image and asked what I thought it may be. I noticed a canine-like head and pointed ears, but was unsure. Since the image was difficult to discern, I asked PB what he thought this was. His immediate response was werewolf. I later asked PB if he had heard any similar sightings in the area. He responded that he hadn't, but he was aware of Rougarou accounts much further south from this location. And then it goes on to talk about the images that are attached. The images that are attached, and there are images that are attached. Would you like to see them?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Okay. And of course, credit where credit is due, Lon Strickler of the Phantoms and Monsters Forum wrote that. So, shout out to Lon. What do you think about that photo right there?
I immediately feel a sense of dread.
Here's the dead bobcat.
I feel like I don't want to live wherever this is at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just from these two photos, that's Louisiana, man. It looks like that all over the fucking place.
Is that what it looks like outside your window today?
No, luckily, no. I just see, like, my lawn and the condemned house down the street.
But the Louisiana countryside's horrifying, like, underbrushy.
Oh, it's so, such thick brush, man.
Mm-hmm.
I've been surveying land out in it, man. It's fucked.
There's like a little something in there. Do you know what I'm saying? There's like a, I don't know if it's a snout or like the head of something. Do you see what I'm looking at?
Kind of, yeah. So you see that dot that's kind of right in the center, reflection, that white thing. Dot?
Yeah.
That looks like the eye. And then right below that looks like the snout and the jaw. And then you go up a little bit and that looks like the ear.
Oh, for sure. My eyes are instantly drawn to it as soon as the image comes up. Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like he's fucking lurking in that little fucking hideout back there.
And this is right next to where the bobcat was found, you said?
Yep.
Okay.
This is like off in the woods from where the bobcat was found.
Mm. And yeah, I'm looking at it. It's not, nobody came in and ate it. It just looks like a kill to me.
Yep.
Oh my God, bro.
Yep.
That's too much for me. I can't really. Ugh.
So yeah.
I try to be empathetic in these kinds of situations, but sometimes you just get to that point where my life would just be over if that happened to me.
Right.
I would have nothing left to give.
Yeah, I don't know. PB should probably start fucking packing bullets.
And he described this growl, you said, yeah?
Yeah, the thing growled at him.
Oh my God. I mean, how do you live in the swamp and not have that thing on you at all times anyway?
You know, I meet a lot of Louisianans and they all have the thing on them.
And understandably.
Understandable.
When you live, you know, in a PvP zone. Yeah, I get it.
I don't know. This is like a fucking end game PvE zone.
Absolutely. Where anything's going to come at you. Oh my God. So,
you got the Bog Witch, you got the Rougarou.
You had said
you that got fucking crawfish.
This particular sighting was close to you, yeah?
A little too close for comfort.
How's that make you feel?
Makes me feel like I'm going to put fucking 13 pennies outside my door before I go to bed.
You better watch your cats. Keep them in at night.
Yeah. It's the Rougarou. How do you feel about that?
I loved it. It was such a varied, you know, story. It came from so many different sources. There were so many different avenues that you could, like, expound upon it.
That was my favorite part was, I looked up the Rougarou and I'm like, damn, you know, it's really just a fucking werewolf. But, like, tracing it back to fucking tracing it back to France and the French werewolf epidemic. Well, tracing it back to Canada and then France, and like just how crazy this story is. I didn't realize the wolf was so fucking ingrained in Louisiana or French culture.
Yeah, like plotting this story and this fear and seeing it evolve every single place it lands, like seeing it reflect culture and shift is really, really cool.
Uh-huh.
This is a good find. Thank you, Tib.
Yes. Shout outs to Tib. You know, sad to see you leave. Happy to see you go, man. Best of luck. Christian, you got any more closing thoughts about the Rougarou? Because I think I've said my piece.
No, if you find yourself unfortunately out there in the swamplands, you know, keep those 13 pennies on you, because I'm looking at a Rougarou right now on this photo.
Well, all right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Well, actually, we'll see you later this week.
Mm-hmm.
So be safe out there. This is Mad Tower Radio, ending transmission.